play from about the 12, and there is Vic, as you talked about, John, rolling and launching downfield for DeSean Jackson, who accelerates on the opening play and all the way for a touchdown. 88 yards.
Oh, I am nerding out right now on this Michael Vick DeSean Jackson talk. What's up, everybody? It is the Locked On Eagles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every single day. Louis DiBiase joining you on this Thursday edition of the show alongside one of my co-hosts, Lars Lewis. What's going on, man?
Well, I'm trying to thaw out my eyebrows, my face, my nose, and every other piece of my body with how freaking cold it is because of this, whatever this vortex or this winter storm that's been coming in throughout the country.
Yeah, the Northeast is getting pounded right now.
I'm in my house and I'm cold and I have the heater on. That's how bad it is.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, you know, I've been sitting here all day kind of just listening to all this this Eagles talk that's been going on today, Lars, and it really doesn't have much to do with the current day situation with the team, although some of it does in a way, and we'll get into that later on. But today on the show, we're just going to take a trip down memory lane because that's exactly what Michael Vick and DeSean Jackson did. Those two names, I'm sure, are very familiar to Eagles fans. One of the most entertaining duos maybe in Eagles history on offense. Definitely not the top connection in NFL history, but one of the most explosive connections.
Separate day.
Yeah, I was going to say, like Vick, DeSean might have been the most electric combination, one of them at least, when you talk about the combined speed of the two and then Michael Vick's arm power with DeSean Jackson's tracking ability down the field. It might be the most explosive connection, one of them at least, in NFL history, and it was just so entertaining to watch. It was my childhood, and that's why I ate up this interview that the two
I was going to say, like, I think those two really turned you into, well, what you are now.
Well, those two were my two favorite Eagles growing up. And I guess that really shows my age, considering it was 2009, which for some people, I mean, although it's been 10 years, really hasn't been that long ago for some Eagles fans. But for me, I was a 10-year-old kid at the time, you know, growing up watching the Eagles. And DeSean Jackson and Michael Vick, like, they pulled in a lot of Eagles fans at the time. They only really had the one successful season in 2010, going 10-6 together. But, you know, DeSean Jackson was in the NFC Championship game in 2008. He scored a touchdown to give the Eagles the lead against the Cardinals late in the fourth quarter. You saw in 2009, he was part of that playoff team that lost to Dallas in the wild card round. In 2013, he had career highs with Chip Kelly in his first year as head coach, and he was in the playoffs against the Saints. So DeSean Jackson, and of course the miracle in the new Meadowlands, which they talked about on the Lefko and Sims podcast yesterday, DeSean Jackson was part of a lot of memorable moments in Eagles history. And that's, Lars, we got to talk about it because there was just so much to unpack with this interview. Again, it was on the Sims and Lefko podcast of Bleacher Report. So I recommend all Eagles fans go check this out. Again, I was just nerding out on this, Lars. And I'm sure when you were listening to the interview, you could tell that I was just going crazy listening to it because I eat it up.
It's probably a wonder why I didn't hear from you for about 2 or 3 hours asking if we were even going to do this tonight.
Yeah, I was listening to the entire interview, and I kept just stopping and writing down thoughts and notes because there were so many different stories they were talking about that I wanted to hit on the show. It was just a jam-packed interview, and it was so cool because there's going to be a documentary. There's going to be an ESPN 30 for 30 someday on Chip Kelly and the Eagles, and we'll get into the Chip Kelly stuff more later on in the show, but just how that Eagles team, really not just Chip Kelly, but the combined era of that and the downfall of Andy Reid with the Dream Team. There's just so many cool side stories, and there was just so much talent on these teams, especially on the offensive side with Michael Vick and DeSean and Jeremy Maclin and McCoy and Brent Celek, and they came up short, but they got into some really cool stuff, and they really started by just talking about their connection. And, you know, we mentioned it already, they were one of the most entertaining duos in the NFL in the 2010s, you know, in the second decade of the 2000s, they were electric. And Vic said on his connection with DeSean that it was the perfect connection because for him, you know, playing in Atlanta the only guy he really had there was Roddy White, and he was extremely young. He talked about in 2009 when he was the third string behind Donovan McNabb and Kevin Cobb, how he would just watch Deshaun on the sidelines and be like, you know, with Vic's arm power, he was like, man, if I can just get one throw to him, I would love to watch him just track the ball down. And Deshaun Jackson said, you know, it was mutual. When Andy Reid came into the locker room in 2009 and asked the players how they felt about bringing in Michael Vick out of jail, a lot of them loved it. You know, Deshaun Jackson grew up watching Michael Vick. He was iconic. You know, he was ranked what? In Madden 2004, he was basically like the Bo Jackson of that game. He could not be stopped. Lars, what was his speed overall? Like a 99?
Basically, the Falcons were banned playing in Madden 04 for whether it be house tournaments or even maybe even league tournaments.
Yeah.
That's how unfair he was in the game.
Like, they talked about it, how he had a 95 speed might have been underrated in that game.
Well, I don't know about that. But,
well, that's the point. Is like he was that unstoppable.
Sometimes legends really become bigger than what they actually were. And I feel like with Michael Vick, up until that time when he came to Philadelphia and he took over as the starter after Kevin Cobb had that concussion against Green Bay in week one of the 2010 season, Michael Vick was not really known for being a passer. Like, the guy could throw it all the way up to the moon, but the problem was he couldn't hit anybody when he threw the ball. It was basically his legs that turned him essentially into an icon. It was when he got to Philadelphia was when Michael Vick became a complete player. I think to this day, Michael Vick was better in Philadelphia than I think he was in Atlanta.
At least, yeah, for that 2010 season, that was the best we've ever seen of Michael Vick. He was the ultimate weapon that season. And, you know, you see a guy like Patrick Mahomes now that Andy Reid's working with. Maybe outside of the 2018 Kansas City Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes, that 2010 Eagles team that Andy Reid had might have been the most talented. Specifically, Michael Vick in 2010. And this is, you know, I don't want to say it was Michael Vick in 2010 was the best quarterback Reed had, because that's a discredit to Donovan McNabb, but he was probably the most dangerous, because he, like you said, it all started with that Green Bay game, week one, and those beautiful Kelly Green jerseys, which, Lars, you absolutely adore, as do I.
And I haven't seen them since.
And they'll be back soon, don't worry. Jeffrey Lurie's working on it. He's working on the NFL, but the NFL's slow on some things. But Michael Vick in that game.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, just in the season, though, he put it all together with his arm. And, of course, it had to do with he had Deshaun Jackson, who, to me, look, I know Jerry Rice and Randy Moss, they're some of the best deep threats ever. But I think it's just a niche, like a player that you think of in the NFL that, like, his forte was deep threat, right? Like home run hits, tracking the ball down 70 yards down the field with just speed and elusiveness and good route running as well. Like, you think of Deshaun Jackson, he's broke so many records. It's really him and Jerry Rice up there in almost every record when it comes to deep plays. He broke one of the records. I think it was most 70-yard receptions in NFL history. He broke it against the Eagles this year, week two. So it helped that he had Deshaun and Jeremy Maclin and Brent Celek and McCoy. You know, that team was loaded on offense.
Yeah, absolutely. And Deshaun Jackson, like you said, he is probably the best deep threat receiver the league has had the last probably 10 years.
I think he might make the Hall of Fame.
It's going to be hard for me to say that Deshaun Jackson should be in the Hall of Fame, because let's be honest here, there's been some guys that have had, shall we say, more long-term success as a wide receiver in the NFL.
I don't know, man. It's been 11
years to get in.
But, yeah, I guess.
Deshaun Jackson's going to get stuck because he hasn't won a Super Bowl. He left right at the time.
But he's a receiver.
I mean, that's true, but I'm thinking in the mindset of writers, and you know how slanted writers can be.
See Terrell Owens.
Exactly. Like, if it's taken Terrell Owens this long to get into the Hall of Fame, and I understand his off-field actions and his antics were some of the reasons why he didn't get in for a long time. Deshaun Jackson doesn't have the kind of accolades that T.O. does when it comes to overall receiving stats, touchdowns, yards, what have you. I feel like Deshaun Jackson is in the Hall of very good. I just don't consider him as a Hall of Fame player.
See, I think the Hall of
Fame... Because
the
wide receiver position is so saturated.
Yeah, I get that. I just think, though, the Hall of Fame also really likes stories, and they like different types of players. And that's why I think Darren Sproles might make it as well, just because of the type of player he was. And that's what DeSean Jackson was. Like, yeah, you might compare him to other receivers and say he didn't do what Terrell Owens did or Jerry Rice, but what he did, he was the best at, and that's home run hitting. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting. But, you know, there was just so many awesome quotes in this interview with Michael Vick and DeSean Jackson. Like, Vick talked about how, because they went back, they said how DeSean Jackson was the best weapon he's ever had, and he was talking about Roddy White in Atlanta, and he talked about how he would throw to LG Crumpler, and how that actually helped him put it all together as a quarterback for the Eagles in 2010, because he worked the middle.
Crumpler,
yeah,
man, that's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
Yeah, and LG Crumpler, I'm sure, doesn't like the Eagles after taking that hit by Brian Dawkins in the 2004 NFC title game. You could still feel that hit from the link. But, you know, he talked about, like, how he worked from the middle to the outsides because of LG, and that helped him put it all together in 2010 when he had all those weapons. And I love this quote from Vic. He said, quote, "We really felt like, even though Vince Young used the dream team phrase that kind of screwed us up, we really had a dream team because we felt like we couldn't be stopped." And it was interesting. He admitted that Vince Young calling them a dream team kind of messed them up in 2011. And while, like, they were never a dream team, they never drafted well, they could not build the defense. They fired Sean McDermott and made Juan Castillo, a offensive line coach, their defensive coordinator. But when it comes to, like, skill positions, like, that was a dream team. Like, that, when you had the all-time leading rusher in franchise history in McCoy, probably the best home run hitter in NFL history in DeSean Jackson, Brent Celek was a damn good receiver back then, people forget, Jeremy Maclin, who went on to have a couple big seasons with Philly and Kansas City, and Michael Vick. Like, Lars, that team not getting past the wild card. Yeah, they had Jason Peters, who's a Hall of Fame left tackle, Todd Harriman's. I mean, it's a disservice.
Yeah, that was JP in his prime, too. That was him at the peak of his powers.
So, you know, I know they won the Super Bowl last year, and it makes it better. It makes it easier to talk about these memories. But that era, right after McNabb and Dawkins, the Vic, DeSean, you know, that era, them not being able to have much success when it comes to winning football games, That really bugs me still.
Right. I feel like it still bugs a lot of people, considering that year they were third in the league in points for. They scored 439 points. Back in 2010, that's a lot of points. Like, nowadays, you're seeing teams routinely getting over 500. But their downfall was defense, Lou. They were 21st in the league in points against. And they had to win in a lot of shootouts. And sometimes it just doesn't fall that way. And talent-wise, it was probably the best offensive team they ever had.
Yeah.
I think if it was the same team and you pushed them 2 years into, like, 2012 and 2013 with this same roster, it probably would have had, you know, a little bit more success. I just feel like that Andy Reid's drafts when it came to defense was kind of failing him in the latter years of his tenure in Philadelphia.
Yeah, it was brutal. And look, they didn't have the leadership. They didn't have the Malcolm Jenkins types back then. You know, those kind of guys, Fletcher Cox, they did not have that defense. They didn't have the leadership, and that really showed. And it, part of it was they didn't have the chemistry. Howie Roseman and Andy Reid, they took some real stretches when it comes to the draft, like taking Danny Watkins in the first round just because they needed a guard. Like, I'm a guy that believes that teams draft for need more so than best player available. I think they take the best player available based on their positional needs. But, like, they took a guard in Danny Watkins, who was already almost 30 years old, had no business being a first-round pick. That was a flop. Then they took Jaquan Jarrett in the second round out of Temple. He was just because they needed a safety, and he flamed out instantly. It was just they didn't draft well, and because of that, they had to make up for it in free agency. Like, Howie Roseman was aggressive back then, too, but he put all his eggs into just free agency, whereas now he utilizes so many different markets in the NFL, and he's so much better at managing the cap now, whereas back then, like, you remember, dude, he was just signing Nnamdi Asamoah and Cohen Jenkins and Ronnie Brown and Vince Young, and you know, the DRC trade actually was pretty good because they traded Kevin Cobb to Arizona for Dominic Rogers-Cromartie in a second, but DRC didn't work out because they tried to fit him into the slot. There was just so many, like, if they had the structure and they just, everything around that offensive talent just, it failed. Like, the firing of Sean McDermott was a mistake. They put a offensive line coach as their defensive coordinator. He then tried to fit Asante, Nnamdi, and DRC together, and that didn't work. They missed on safety. they just did so many things wrong, and they didn't have the leadership. And I think it was because Andy Reid was just trying to press to save his job, because at that point, dude, he was on thin ice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially when losing, what was it, losing 3 out of 4 NFC championships?
Yeah, well, in 2008
Actually,
he lost
4 out of 5, I
Yeah, because remember, in 2008 he lost to Arizona.
Yep.
So that's,
at
I mean,
that point, it doesn't matter how deep in the playoffs you get, you keep losing in the conference final, it's going to, a little more pressure is going to be put on you to actually win the damn thing, because if you're getting so close, yet you keep falling short all the time, sooner or later people are going to get restless, and they're wondering, like, okay, when is it going to be the actual year you're going to do it? Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we're in 2019, and we're still asking this question.
Well, yeah, and I think in 2009 when he lost in the wild card round to Dallas, and then in 2010 he couldn't get out of the wild card, and then he went 8-8 and 4-12. It was just, it was tough. It was time for Andy Reid to go. He was there for so long, and it just, that last stand for Andy Reid in Philadelphia just didn't work out, and it's disappointing. And this interview was interesting, because you can tell, you could hear it in Vic and Deshaun's voice. They're like, man, we really had something there, and it just didn't work out, and it's a damn shame. It's going to be one of those teams, that one of the eras in sports that we talk about, and we're like, man, those teams had some talent. Let's take a quick break here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. When we come back, me and Lars are going to get into some interesting stuff remaining on this DeSean Jackson, Michael Vick conversation with the Lefko and Sims podcast, some about DeSean possibly coming back to Philadelphia in 2019, the really good stuff on Chip Kelly, which, Lars, you know I love talking about Chip. It's going to be a documentary someday, like I'm saying. So that's all coming up right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast next. All right, everybody, welcome back to Locked On Eagles. Lars, I want to do a fun little exercise here to start the second segment. So 2017, the Eagles win the Super Bowl. We talk about like how that 2010 team might have had the most talent on offense of all time. I think the 2017 Eagles is pretty close. I want to put together a combined offense. Like, let's say we are the GMs and we have the 2017 Eagles to work with and the 2010 Eagles to work with. Let's put together an offense with those. Are you ready for this?
All right, so the 2010 Eagles with the 2017 Eagles. Okay.
So let me start. I'll start with the offensive line. Okay, I'll go first, and then I want to hear your team. I tweeted this out, so hit us up at DiBiase-LOE, at LockedOnBirds, at LarsLewis12. Send us in your ultimate 2017-2010 Eagles offense, because these are two of the best Eagles offenses of all time. So on offensive line, I had Jason Peters, the 2010 version, of course. At left guard, I had Todd Harriman's. I think that's the only offensive lineman I had of 2010, because at center, look, Jason Kelce last year might have been the best center in all of football. I put Brandon Brooks on at right guard. He's been the best guard in football since 2016. Yes, even over Zach Martin. You heard me, Dallas Cowboy fans that listen to this podcast, just to chirp us. And then at right tackle.
Ooh, burn.
Yeah, and then at right tackle, I got Lane Johnson. So I feel like our offensive line is pretty much the 2017
line.
Yeah,
it's going to be a lot of 2017, yeah, guys, considering that you got a lot of Pro Bowlers, and especially Jason Kelce, who, in my mind, is the top three center in the NFL, if not maybe the best in the NFC.
And, you know, I put Todd Harriman to left guard instead of Wiz. I think that was, Todd was one of the best Eagles interior linemen of the 2000s, and really,
right, you got to put someone from the 2010 Philadelphia Eagles on this line. They did something, yeah, right, considering how many points they scored.
So then I put Carson Wentz of 2017 over Michael Vick. Michael Vick, look, he won Comeback Player of the Year. He almost won MVP over Tom Brady that year if Brady didn't throw for 50-plus touchdowns. But Wentz in 2017 was the best quarterback the Eagles have ever seen. So I have Wentz at quarterback. My receivers, on the outside, I put Alshon, and then I put DeSean. In the slot, I was going back and forth between Aguilar and Jeremy Maclin. I decided to put Maclin. He's had a 1,400-yard season. He followed that up with a 1,000-yard season in Kansas City. He's played in the slot with the Chiefs and with the Eagles. I put Maclin there. Then I got Zach Ertz at tight end. And at running back, of course, LeSean McCoy. That offense right there. So it's a mix. I got DeSean and Maclin, but I got Ertz and Jeffrey, got McCoy, got Wentz. It's a nice balance when it comes to the skill positions. But offensive line, it was pretty much 2017, except for Todd Harriman's.
Okay.
Let's hear
all
yours.
All right, so I'll give mine. I'll start at the line as well, and I'm I'm actually going to have the same line you will. Jason Peters from 2010, left tackle. Todd Harriman at left guard. Jason Kelce at center. And we're going to have Brandon Brooks at right guard. And Lane Johnson at the tackle spot. Now, I'm going to deviate myself a little bit.
Okay.
I'm actually taking Michael Vick.
Okay.
The 2010 Michael Vick is the starter.
I thought maybe you were going to take Nick Foles.
I was really flirting with that idea as well, but Michael Vick, 676 rush yards, 9 touchdowns. In 12 games, he had 21 TDs, 3,000 yards passing. And I know that Wentz in the same amount of games threw for 33. Watching Michael Vick that year, he was, like you said, the ultimate weapon. I've got legs, and I've got a rocket arm that I can have him utilize.
I think that's part of what made you an Eagles fan, truthfully, is Vick breaking out that year.
Yeah, I would really think so, because growing up as a kid, you know, I used to have this game on the Sega Genesis called NFL Quarterback Club. And this is for the old guys that might be listening to this.
That's dating yourself.
And this game was pretty cool, where you can do all the quarterback competitions that you saw at the Pro Bowl, like accuracy, distance, read and recognition, and mobility. And the best quarterback in the game that was the most balanced of all three was Randall Cunningham.
Right.
And seeing Michael Vick that year in 2010 was like, my God, they have Randall Cunningham's been reincarnated into Michael Vick in Philadelphia. It was like a dream come true. That's kind of how I became an Eagles fan, and Michael Vick I'm going to have as my quarterback because of that.
Okay, let's
running
see your,
back.
Yeah.
Boy.
Is this even a question? I mean, what are you going to put, a Ajayi here?
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to implement a fullback on top of this.
Leonard Weaver?
I'm going to have LeSean McCoy running back, and I'm having LeGarrette Blount as my fullback.
I actually like that. That's cool.
Because, man, you look at that year for Blount, 766 yards, 2 touchdowns on 173 rushes, and, man, was he immense in the Super Bowl.
I'd love to have that one, too. He scored a touchdown in every playoff
game. Yeah, absolutely. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to have McCoy at running back. I'm going to have Blount as my fullback and, like, pass blocker. And wide receivers, I'll have DeSean Jackson on the right side. In the slot, boy, this was...
It's got to be Aguilar or Macklin, right? You're not putting Jason Avant there.
Hell no. I'm going to take Alshon. I'll take Alshon Jeffrey in the slot, because that year in 2017, I know that Macklin had better numbers overall. Macklin had 964 yards, 10 touchdowns on 70 receptions. Seeing Alshon Jeffrey that season, nearly 800 yards and only 57 catches, 9 touchdowns, he stretched the field. I feel like having that kind of package is truly incredible.
Did you have DeSean with Aguilar on the outside?
Yeah, I'm going to have Aguilar on the outside with Alshon in the slot.
All right, that's an interesting
idea. Of course, Zach Ertz.
You got some burners there. You got some size with Alshon and Ertz. I like it. I got my
burners on the outside, and I got my two safety valves, which is Ertz and Alshon Jeffrey in the slot.
Yeah, look, again, this exercise just goes to show, like, that 2010 team was loaded, much like this 2017 Eagles Super Bowl champion. And they just, again, though, they didn't have the leadership. They didn't have the defense. They didn't have it all together with the coaching staff like they do now and in 2017. So, yeah, it was a loaded team. And look, DeSean Jackson, he could be back in Philadelphia. So you just lined up Alshon Jeffrey, DeSean Jackson, Nelson Aguilar. That could be the Eagles' starting receivers in 2019. And I know you're laughing because I never give up on the reunions.
You have been pushing this narrative for at least, 3 weeks.
I've been pushing it for 3 years, Lars, since the 2017 offseason, basically. But look, DeSean was asked.
He ain't going to give up, folks. He won't give up.
I'm not going to give up. And DeSean Jackson was asked by the Sims and Lefko podcast on coming back to Philadelphia if he would consider it. And Jackson didn't really. So they kind of were pitching it to him in a joking way, saying that the Eagles could use a speed, you know, a deep threat down the field, which is true. I think Nelson Aguilar doesn't get nearly enough credit as a deep threat, but as a outside receiver, because Aguilar offers so much over the middle as well and inside and in the slot that DeSean and Aguilar would complement each other perfectly, if you ask me. You know, Torrey Smith ran a lot of similar routes that DeSean does last year, where he was just running vertical routes, and Aguilar still 8 down the field in the slot. So I think it's a great fit, of course, and I'm a fanboy about this, but it makes a lot of sense. He hasn't slowed down over 11 years. He's fast, really, right now. I think he's just as fast as he was when he was drafted in 2008. Like, in 11 years, it's crazy that this guy can still rip off a 4.3. But he didn't really
just
say...
Just look at the games he had with Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Right, exactly. I mean, we saw it, the tear he went on against New Orleans in week one.
Yeah, when they played Philly.
In week two. The first play of the game, he burns Jalen Mills for a 70-plus-yard touchdown, which I guess...
Yeah, we were watching that. You look pretty sick.
Well, it's just a dagger. It hurts more than if any other receiver would beat our guys, because it's Deshaun. Like, he did that for us for so long, and now he's been doing it to us since 2013. Now he's been killing the Eagles. He doesn't have an agent right now, which is interesting. He is still under contract with Tampa Bay, and although Bruce Arians is trying to recruit him again, I don't think it's... Look, clearly, he talked about wanting to be a Ram today. He openly said he would love to end up in Los Angeles with Sean McVay, who he adored in Washington. He really talked up McVay when he got that head coaching job with the Rams, Deshaun Jackson did. So he's already talking about what other teams he would like to go to, and he's still under contract with the Buccaneers. Like, he really, Lars, does not like playing with Jameis Winston. He can't stand it.
I can't say I blame him. The guy's won a turnover machine and two a head case.
Yeah, and I look.
But actually, bringing this up, there was a really funny tweet I saw from Adam Rank for Fantasy Football. He said Deshaun Jackson wants to be traded to the Rams. It's like the guy trying to invite himself to a party, and the Rams have to be all, yeah, my mom said I can only allow 4 people, so...
It's not happening. Like,
it won't happen.
Brandon Cooks is already that kind of player. They have Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp. Philadelphia is the more realistic possibility. He can go try to win a championship with a team that he was on before. It would be the ultimate redemption story. He knows Doug Peterson. He knows Jason Peters, and hopefully Brandon Graham's back. I think, and look, he likes Carson Wentz. He talked with him after the game in 2016. He was really talking him up in that offseason. Deshaun Jackson... Hopefully now he finally prioritizes winning. I'm not saying he was a selfish player. I'm not saying he doesn't care about winning. But the money has gotten in the way. It did in 2017 when he had a chance to come back. I think the Eagles had serious interest in Deshaun. I think it was mutual. We saw it. Adam Schefter reported it, and I believe Schefter when he says things like the Eagles have interest in bringing back Deshaun. But Tampa Bay was willing to pay him $12 million on the open market, and he's still under contract there. Look, I think he's going to be gone from Tampa. I don't think there's any way he wants to go back there. I just hope that now he doesn't go to another team just because of the paycheck. Like, finally for him, prioritize getting a ring. Like, you saw it in his face talking about the Eagles. You saw him talking about it when the Eagles won the Super Bowl last year. It hurts him that he wasn't a part of that championship team, and I feel like he thinks he could have been part of that team if Chip Kelly didn't cut him. So to me now, let's see what he prioritizes in the offseason. Put aside the dollars, because the Eagles cannot give you a big contract, and come back and be a part of what is still a top-tier NFL team. Like, you know, he's not someone that needs 10 catches in a game anyway. He just needs 2 catches, one for a 60-yard touchdown. You know what I'm saying? So, like, it's not like either he's going to be upset about the smaller workload.
No, I wouldn't imagine so, because I feel like now he's at a time in his career where, yes, he is a weapon, but he's not what he was in 2013 and 2014 in terms of having to be the number one guy.
He still, though,
doesn't have to.
He still led the league in yards per reception.
I get that.
Yeah.
It's in terms of the workload, as you said. He doesn't have to catch 90 balls. He doesn't have to get 1,500 yards. But what he can do for Philadelphia's offense is that if you put him back on the outside, you put him there, you put Alshon on the other side, you get Aguilar going back to his natural position in the slot, you've got Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert, if they want to run 12 personnel or not for Philadelphia, I feel like it would be a perfect fit for Philadelphia, and I think for Deshaun Jackson as well, because that gives them the one piece to have it look like the 2017 offense again.
And this isn't something that I'm just pulling out of thin air, Lars. Like, they have been trying to find a vertical threat since getting rid of Jackson. They brought in Torrey Smith last year. They drafted Shelton Gibson, who was a burner at West Virginia. And they signed Mike Wallace in the offseason last year. They are trying to find their new DeSean Jackson. Why not? I know it could be Hollywood Brown in the draft, maybe, but why not just bring back DeSean himself? Like, I think it's possible. He even said today he wants a coach that understands, you know, what that the players really, not saying the players run the show, but he was talking about how, you know, like Chip Kelly, every rep in practice was just, you know, do or die. And he's more talking about he wants a coach like Sean McVay or like Doug Peterson that understands that game day is really what matters and to not push the veterans to a certain level. Like both Vic and Jackson touched on how some coaches push too hard in practice. Like Vic told a story about how like he wouldn't throw as far to DeSean to make him run farther on like a Wednesday practice. He would tell him to ease off on a play because he's not going to him on that route. So DeSean, it sounds like he's not someone that is willing to go to another disciplinarian head coach. And maybe that's why he talked about the Rams specifically. But like, I think it's a perfect match. I think he would fit in well with this culture with Doug Peterson.
Yeah, I would imagine so. And there's a, and of course, you bring in a veteran who's played in Philadelphia before, who's been with Doug Peterson before, and I feel like it can provide Carson Wentz also with a lot of help, because when you bring in who is actually the most experienced receiver out of all of them currently on this roster,
yep,
I think he would open up some new options and new things for Philadelphia to use that maybe they haven't even used in 2017 or even 2016 when Wentz was playing.
Yeah, I'm with you. They need, look, the one thing they need on offense now, they have the size, they have the route running, they have the hands, they need speed now. And DeSean Jackson's that, I guess it's going to come down to dollar signs. You know, for the free agent market, they overpay people. And if he gets bought out by Tampa Bay and he's a free agent, you know, there's going to be teams that want to pay a guy like that. That is, you know, a team like the Buffalo Bills with Josh Allen, I'm sure would love to have a DeSean Jackson track a Josh Allen 80-yard bomb.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
You know, DeSean Jackson, again, it could come down to dollar signs, but if he really wants to prioritize winning now, I think Philadelphia is the main spot. Because, yeah, he mentioned the Rams specifically today in this interview, but he's not going to the Rams, so he should, I think, take that out of his mind right now. Let's take one more break, Lars. When we come back, we got to get into the Chip Kelly stuff that Vic and Jackson talked about. I'm excited for this. This is the Locked On Eagles podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back to the final segment of this Thursday edition of Locked On Eagles. Lars, I hope you're having fun. I love taking trips down memory lane with the Philadelphia Eagles, especially this Vic DeSean era, because that was my favorite. And I know they didn't. I know it didn't really result in a lot of winning, but specifically, you know, after the Dream Team, after that 4-12 season, they bring in Chip Kelly, and for me, I had kind of already wrapped up mentally that the Vic, Jackson, McCoy, like that run I felt like was over. I didn't know what Chip Kelly was going to do, but Vic had already gotten, you know, he got hurt in 2013 as he always did. He just couldn't stay healthy, and rookie Nick Foles was playing, and it seemed like Michael Vick was not going to be on the Eagles in 2013. They brought in Dennis Dixon. People thought, including me, that maybe he could start for the Eagles since he ran Chip Kelly's first offense in Oregon when he was the offensive coordinator with the Ducks, and they had a second year Nick Foles, who went on to throw for 27 touchdowns and 2 picks. So for me, I kind of thought it was over. But then Chip Kelly stuck with Vic. He named him the starter. They had that huge week one blowout in Washington where they destroyed RG3 and the Redskins. And, you know, DeSean Jackson looked incredible. So did LeSean McCoy. But then, you know, it all came full circle. Chip Kelly really showed his true colors. He didn't like DeSean. DeSean leaves. Michael Vick's gone. Like, it all ended so abruptly. And that's what Vic even said. And that, you could tell it bothers them still that Chip Kelly kind of pulled that team apart. DeSean Jackson said, quote, he messed up the Dream Team. Like, we really could have been a Super Bowl champion. And I thought that was interesting. Like, look, I think some of the things Chip did to those guys, like, the animosity should be there. Like, I understand it. Kelly was lining them up as second and third stringers in training camp when he came in. That's brutal for a 13-year veteran in Michael Vick, a proven deep threat and number one receiver in DeSean Jackson and Macklin and McCoy, and he's running guys that are part of the practice squad with those guys on the same level. So there was things like that you could get away with in college that Chip just didn't handle right in the pros. Like, he did so many things the wrong way. Not only on the field, like failing to adjust when it comes to his plays. Like Bobby Wagner said, like the Seattle Seahawks knew what Chip Kelly was going to call. They knew what was coming. It was too simplistic, and he was just so bullish on his system and just execution. He would always blame execution. He would never take, you know, responsibility. He did things the wrong way on the field, but also off the field. I think it was Brandon Boykin that said that Chip Kelly would pass by him in the hallway, and Chip wouldn't even say anything to him. Like he acted like he was big time. He wanted to really be the only star of the show. Let's be clear.
The fact that he made Michael Vick go into tears,
yeah,
during a preseason.
He did things the wrong way, and he shouldn't have. I don't think he should have got rid of DeSean Jackson and McCoy and Macklin. He never recognized him.
He got too arrogant.
Yeah.
He takes his system. Mm-hmm. He can just plug and play players. Look, you're not Bill Belichick. That doesn't work like that. You have a long-term guy in Tom Brady and as a starting quarterback, and you can adapt in ways where you can get guys to plug and play into your system. Not everybody's like that. Chip Kelly thought he can do that. The major difference is Chip Kelly was never in the NFL. It's a far more different beast in the NFL and how you can adapt and adjust and seeing things in the NFL in years past with the way that, you know, Bill Belichick had, because he was in the NFL for many years before he became the coach of the Patriots.
Right.
Now, I know that Eagles fans are going to get really mad at me because I'm mentioning New England as a bar for this, but I think Chip Kelly tried to be a Bill Belichick, and you don't get that unless you have that proven pedigree that Bill had before he got to New England.
Yeah, DeSean Jackson even said Chip Kelly just never really recognized talent. Michael Vick said it was always about the system and about himself. It was never about Mike. Like he didn't value individuality, and it's probably why Michael Vick was crying in that hyperbolic chamber, because he felt like with his leadership of handling that Riley Cooper situation in the summer. Remember the racial slurs at the concert, and he got into a fist fight with Kerry Williams at practice, and Michael Vick was the guy kind of breaking it all up, and he felt like he was winning the battle against Nick Foles. And Chip Kelly probably never said anything. He wasn't really about individual accomplishments, and I'm sure he wasn't very complimentary of his players. And it's true, like, he didn't recognize talent. He was a system guy, and I think teams like the Eagles of 2017 and the Rams of 2018 are proving that the players do really run the show. You can't replace DeSean Jackson with Josh Huff and expect to get the same execution. So
you need to maximize your talent. You're not supposed to force them into a system that they're not familiar with and think it's going to have better results than what they've had before. It doesn't work like that in the NFL.
And also, those guys did fit into Kelly's offense. I mean, you saw 2013 how good that offense was. DeSean Jackson had his best career with Chip Kelly, or his best season of his career, and so did Jeremy Maclin in 2014. But Kelly just thought it was all about him. He didn't think DeSean Jackson and Jeremy Maclin and all those guys made the system work. It was, to him, the system is what ran it, and those guys were just, you know, a ploy in that, and that he could throw in anyone and expect it to be different. I thought with a new quarterback, you know, adjusting his offense, trying to be more diverse, draft picks, leadership, I feel like they could have went pretty far. But let's also, Lars, not pretend like the dream team was a real thing that Chip Kelly killed. Kelly took the 4-12 Eagles team to a 10-6 record. He shouldn't have blown it up.
Title.
He shouldn't have blown it up the way he did. But they weren't title contenders before he got there. They were 10-6 in 2010. They were 8-8 in 2011. So they weren't title contenders. And you know, it wasn't their fault. I don't think it was Vick it was, because he was never healthy. But it wasn't DeSean Jackson's fault or Macklin or McCoy's that they went 8-8 and then 4-12. But, you know, again, though, they weren't this team that was on the verge of winning it all, and Chip Kelly blew that up. So that's the one thing I didn't like, was that they blamed Chip Kelly. You know, perhaps if they kept building with those guys after 2013, they let Macklin get healthy, they drafted a quarterback, which Chip Kelly really never tried to do. You know, I was all in on Mariota, but he brought in Sam Bradford, and Nick Foles was his guy for a couple years. Maybe they could have gotten close to what Peterson's done with this team. Or maybe some of them would have been around long enough to see the Super Bowl with Doug Peterson. But Kelly had to change the way he did things, and he didn't. And he got rid of all those guys. You know, he made Michael Vick cry. So, yeah, it's, you know, I get that. I get the animosity, for sure, because Chip Kelly the way he did things, you know, blowing up the team in 2015, he didn't know how to manage the cap. He exiled Howie Roseman to the other side of the NovaCare complex. But at the same time, like, let's be real. Like, I get that those two don't like Chip Kelly, and they shouldn't. But first, for Michael Vick, like, Nick Foles played really well in the summer of 2013. The offense ran faster with Nick Foles. So I don't feel like Michael Vick blew him away in that QB competition. And also, let's be real, they were 4-12. They weren't 13-3 the year before. So I do get that they're upset about how it all ended and how abrupt it was. And yeah, the potential was there. Things did not go right in the Dream Team era and in the Chip Kelly era. But this part, I'm not really all on board with how they said it. I do get it, though. Dude, so let me tell you a story, Lars, before we wrap up the show. So an Eagles player that I can't say the name of, I was talking to a couple years ago when Chip Kelly got rid of LeSean McCoy and McCoy was going after Chip when he was a Buffalo Bill. This player told me that Chip Kelly used to, with sports science, they used to test players' urine samples for hydration, different things like that, all right? So this player told me that the veterans didn't like that, and they asked Chip Kelly to stop doing it. Chip Kelly stopped doing it, but then brought up a new test. He said that this was for something different. He wouldn't tell them that it was for the exact same. It was the same process, basically. And the veterans looked into the company that Chip Kelly was working with. They looked into the testing themselves, and they found out it was the same thing. And Chip Kelly basically broke their trust. Like, those guys never trusted Chip Kelly again. It was stuff like that just, it killed Chip Kelly. Like, he started off super hot in 2013. He could have been like Doug Peterson and just kept adjusting and could have been really aggressive, but he just did not do things the right way, like that story, and it killed him in the end. And I get why Vic and Deshaun just can't stand the guy.
Yeah. I can definitely imagine. So, like, being a veteran in Michael Vick, who was in the league for quite a few years, all of a sudden a new coach comes in and says, okay, open competition for everybody. Nobody's got a guaranteed spot. Because in his mind, it was his system, and he said, okay, you guys go ahead. Whoever's the better player gets the start on this team. That can rub a lot of veterans the wrong way immediately.
And he never got that.
Where these guys have earned their spots. And yes, they had a bad season the year before, but a lot of players, you got to manage 53 egos in that locker room, and since you have a rather large ego yourself,
yeah, the biggest one on the team,
instantly clashing with them. It was bound to fail, whether it be 1 year down the road, or even what happened when they went 6-9 and he was canned before the last game of the year. Yes, they went 10-6 those 2 years, but honestly, that's just not a thing that can be sustainable to win a Super Bowl, because you got to have your players trust you as a coach, and you got to give love back to the players.
Right.
Instantly coming in there and asserting yourself as, look, I'm the man, even though he has not stepped foot on an NFL field ever, certainly was going to be a disaster from the start, even with those two good seasons.
Yeah, and I guess it worked out. I'm not complaining, because it helped move the Eagles forward with Howie Roseman and Doug Peterson, and 2 years later, the Eagles are Super Bowl champions. But Lars, loved doing this episode with you. This was really fun. I ate up this interview. You knew I was really enjoying it, and thanks for taking the trip with me down memory lane.
Oh, yeah, it was a real pleasure. I'm trying to distract myself from the impending doom that is outside.
Absolutely. Well, that's going to do it for today's edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. For my co-host of the day, Lars Lewis, I'm Lou DiBiase signing off. Please follow all our Twitter accounts at Locked On Birds, at DiBiase LOE, at Lars Lewis 12, and my co-host Gino Camilleri at Gino_LOE. Thanks for downloading. As always, thanks for listening, and let's go Birds!